Colgate Tooth Powder presents The Theater of Romance. Tonight, Colgate Tooth Powder brings you a special dramatic version of Alice Duer Miller's The White Cliffs, starring Constance Cummings. Tonight and every Tuesday night, Colgate Tooth Powder brings you The Theater of Romance with your favorite stars in your favorite stories and plays.
Use Colgate Tooth Powder, keep smiling just right. Use it each morning and use it at night.
One of the most notable stories to come from this war has been the late Alice Duer Miller's dramatic poem, The White Cliffs. It's our pleasure to bring it to you now in a dramatized adaptation by Gene Holloway, starring Constance Cummings as Susan, with Carl Swenson as John.
I have loved England dearly and deeply since that first morning, shining and pure, the white cliffs of Dover I saw rising steeply out of the sea that once made her secure. 1914, early May. London was crowded and rich and gay. It happened the first evening I was there, someone was giving a ball in Belgrave Square. A light blue carpet on the stair, tall young footmen everywhere. I went up the stairs between them all, strange and frightened and shy and small. And as I entered the ballroom door, someone beside me turned and smiled and, looking down at me, said,
"Hello. I fancy you're Bertie's Australian cousin, Nancy. He told me to tell you that he'd be late at the Foreign Office and not to wait supper for him, but to go with me and try to behave as if I were he."
I should have told him on the spot that I had no cousin, that I was not Australian Nancy, that my name was Susan Dunn, that I came from a small white town on a deep-cut bay in the smallest state in the USA. I meant to tell him, but changed my mind. I needed a friend, and he seemed kind. So I put my gloved hand into his glove, and we danced together and fell in love.
I've never danced so well with anyone before.
I haven't either.
Are you going to be in England long?
A week.
A week? Well, we shall have to crowd a lot into that. A week. I'm sorry to hear that.
Why?
Because I'll never be able to say all the things I want to say in a week.
How long would you need to say all those things?
I might need a lifetime.
It was a wonder ball, and you were very kind, John. I've never had such fun before. I'm sorry it's over.
Oh, there'll be other balls.
Not like this one. I'm so glad we decided to walk back to the hotel.
You know, I picked the longest possible way back to your hotel. I'm very reluctant to let go this evening. Let's sit here on this bench a moment. There are some things I find I must say to you.
There's something I must say to you.
We've only known one another a few hours, and yet it seems that I've known you always. You know, when I was 7 and had my first crush on a girl, that girl was you. And when I was 15, I worshipped the ground a certain young lady of 20 walked upon, and she was you, too. You were the first girl I took dancing, the first girl I kissed, and the girl I was always talking about whenever I had anything at all to say about marriage.
Oh, John.
The moment you looked up at me and smiled, I thought, at last. And when we started to dance, and I held you in my arms, I knew that I'd never let you go.
Please, you don't know anything about me.
I know I love you, and that's all I need to know.
Please, you must listen to me. I'm not what you think, or who you think I am. I've been acting a lie all evening. I'm not Bertie's Australian cousin, Nancy. I don't even know Bertie. I should have told you at once, but I couldn't.
Oh, my darling. I knew you weren't Nancy the moment you began to speak.
You knew?
Of course I did. Darling, you haven't the right accent for an Australian Nancy. What is your name?
Susan Dunn.
Hello, Susan Dunn. Welcome to England. Welcome to my home and to my heart.
They showed me all London, Johnny and his friends. They took me to the country for long weekends. I never was so happy. I never had such fun. I stayed many weeks in England instead of just one.
Susan, dear, this is my mother. Mother, this is Miss Dunn.
How do you do, my dear? John has told us all so much about you. It's such a pleasure to have you visit us here in Devon.
Thank you. It was so nice of you to ask me.
Show Miss Dunn the house, John, if she cares to see it.
Oh, I'd love to see it. And I'd love to meet the family ghost. John told me all about him.
I'm sure I've never seen him, but I did hear him once outside my door. It was the night John's father died.
Perhaps I don't really want to meet him after all.
You know, Miss Dunn, it's hard to believe you're an American. You know, really, you don't speak like one.
She seemed to think she'd said a thing both courteous and flattering. I answered, though my wrists were weak with anger. Not at all. I speak, at least I've always thought this true, as educated people do in any country, even mine.
Really?
I saw her head incline. I saw her ready to assert Americans are easily hurt. And suddenly, I was heartsick and lonely for my own people.
John, dear, a letter just came in the post for you.
Oh, thank you, Mother. Well, that's odd that Susan's writing. I was going to meet her in London for dinner tonight. Perhaps she can't make it.
Well, open it and see.
Dear John, I'm going home. My train leaves at break of day. I'm going home to those who think the way I think and speak as I do. I could not spoil our happy memories with the stress and strain of parting. I'm going after her, Mother.
You're sure about this girl, John?
Very sure.
Then bring her home with you.
The Southampton landing. Porters, neat and quick. And a young man standing, leaning on his stick.
Oh, Susan, Susan, Susan. Did you really think I'd ever let you go away?
No, John, you shouldn't have come.
Susan, do you love me?
Love you. You don't have to ask me that. I never tried to hide it.
Darling, it doesn't matter that you're from one country and I'm from another. All that matters is that at last we've found each other. Will you marry me, darling? Will you please marry me?
Johnny and I were married. England then had been a week at war, and all the men wore uniform as English people can, unconscious of it. We went down to Devon in a warm summer rain, knowing that our happiness might never come again. I not forgetting, till death do us part, was outrageously happy, with death in my heart.
I want to know everything there is to know about you. Who was your first beau?
My first beau was named Jimmy O'Brien. His hair was as red as his name, and he was covered with freckles. But he loved me madly.
Oh, well, how old were you?
4.
Oh, how old was he?
40. John, I don't want you to go to war. I know it's selfish. I know I shouldn't say these things, but I can't help it. I love you. I'm frightened, Johnny.
I know, darling. I don't want to go to war either. But when the things you respect and love are threatened, there's nothing else that you can do. Each generation must protect the honor of its country. It is a trust that's been handed down from father to son. We aren't a warlike people, but if we must fight, we will, however little taste we have for it.
I understand.
I know you do.
I understand, and I love you very much. I settled down in Devon when Johnny went to France. Such a tame ending to a great romance. Two lonely women with nothing much to do but get to know each other. She did, and I did, too.
Susan, dear, those bandages must be rolled tight up. Better do them again.
All of them?
Oh, I'm afraid so. It's the regulation, you know.
Oh, I've been working on them all day. I can't work on them anymore. I'm cold and tired and cross.
It's colder in the trenches.
Sorry. Of course it is.
I'll do them over.
I'll help you.
No, you've enough to do. I'll try to have them finished by the time you're ready to go to the hospital.
It isn't much of a world to be young in, my dear. I know that. But we have to do everything we can. Everything we can.
I think I shall always remember, until I die, her face that day in December, when in a hospital ward together, she and I were writing letters to the wounded men and dying, writing and crying over their wounds. Suddenly, looking up, I saw the old vicar moving like fate down the hospital ward until he stood still beside her where she sat at the bed.
Dear friend, come home. I have tragic news.
She looked straight at me without a spasm of fear, her face not stern nor mad.
Is it Percy or John?
The eldest, Percy.
Percy, I'm needed here. I can't go until every letter is written. The dead must wait on the living. This is my work. I'm dead.
And she did. The whole long day.
In a moment, Colgate Tooth Powder will bring you the second act of The White Cliff. But first, young lady, remember this message from Colgate Tooth Powder. Love binds two hearts together, but a little breath of trouble can pull them apart. So if you're looking for romance, be sure, be very sure that no little breath of trouble, you know, unpleasing breath, will come between you and your heart's desire. Just do this. Brush your teeth night and morning and before every date with Colgate Tooth Powder. For Colgate Tooth Powder cleans your breath as it cleans your teeth. Yes, night and morning and before every date. Because scientific tests have definitely proved that in 7 cases out of 10, Colgate Tooth Powder instantly stops unpleasing breath that originates in the mouth. As for cleaning, no dentifrice at any price will clean your teeth more quickly and thoroughly than Colgate Tooth Powder. Remember the name, Colgate Tooth Powder, with the accent on powder. Colgate Tooth Powder brings you the second part of The White Cliff, starring Constance Cummings.
Out of the dark and dearth of happiness on earth, out of a world inured to death and pain, on a fair spring morn, to me a son was born, and hope was born, the future lived again. And John came home on leave, and all was joy and thankfulness to me. John.
Susan.
Oh, John, it's so wonderful to be able to see you again, to reach out and touch you. Oh, John, I've been so lonely without you.
You weren't without me, not for a moment. I carried you in my heart wherever I went.
I've been thinking about names. I'd like to call him John after you. Or if not that, then I'd rather...
But, darling, the eldest son is always called Percy.
Well, now, look. I didn't ask to call him Hiram after my father.
Yes, but the eldest son is always called Percy, dear.
But I hate the name Percy. There's so many better names. Richard or Ronald or Peter or Jack or James or Ian.
But the eldest son is always called Percy, dear.
Oh, John, not Percy. I won't have him called Percy. He's my son, too. And I positively will not have him going through life with a name like Percy.
Percy, Richard, Peter, I baptize thee in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Ghost. Amen.
John went back to his company, and I could do nothing but ache and long that my country, peaceful, rich, and strong, would come and do battle for England's sake. And at last, like the dawn of a calm, fair day after a night of terror and storm, they came. My young, light-hearted countrymen, tall and gay, looking the world over in search of fun and fame. All the bands playing, over there, send the word to beware. And as the American flag went fluttering by, Englishmen uncovered, and I began to cry. How beautiful upon the mountains, How beautiful upon the downs. How beautiful in the village post office, on the pavements of the town. How beautiful in the huge print of newspapers. Beautiful while telegraph wires hum, while telephone bells wildly jingle the news that peace has come. That peace has come at last, that all wars cease. How beautiful upon the mountains are the footsteps of the messengers of peace. In the depth of the night, when the old house was sleeping, I, lying alone in a desolate bed, heard soft on the staircase the slow footstep creeping. The ear of the living, the step of the dead. In the depth of the night, betwixt midnight and morning, a step drawing near on the old oaken floor, on the stair, in the gallery, the ghost that gives warning of death by that heartbreaking sigh at my door. I do not remember the words that they said. Killed, Douai, November. I knew John was dead. All done and over that day long ago. The white cliffs of Dover. Little did I know. Nanny brought up my son as his father before him, teaching him to be civil and manly and cool in the face of danger. And then, before I knew it, the time came for him to go off to school.
Will you hear my lesson, Mother?
Of course, dear.
Two and two are four. Three and three are five?
No. Think again.
Three and three are six.
That's right. Now, four and four?
Four and four are...
John's own son, that blonde, bowed face, those clear, steady eyes. Hard to be certain that the dead don't rise. Jogging on his pony through the autumn day.
Bad year for fruit, Mother, but good salt hay. Would you care to race me home?
I'd love to race you home. Let's go. Bowling for the village, as his father had before. Coming home at evening to read the cricket score.
Mother, there's a dance at the club on Saturday. Thought I might go. There's a new girl in Devon. Quite a looker, too.
Margaret Winfield?
That's right. I thought I might ask her.
Why don't you?
Say, Mother, look at this paper. What do you suppose that fellow Hitler is up to? I don't like the looks of things at all.
No. Neither do I. Neither do I. Later than many, earlier than some, I knew the die was cast, that war must come, that war must come. Night after night I lay, stealing a broken heart to face the day when he, my son, would tread the very same path that his father trod. When the day came, I was not sealed, not ready. My child, why should you die for England, too?
Is she not worth it if I must?
Is she not worth it if I must, he said. John would have answered, yes. But John was dead. And then, I thought of the history of Englishmen, knowing what the English have always known, something that none can teach or tell, the moment when God's voice says, rebel. And were they not English, our forefathers, never more English than when they dared to be rebels against her, that stern, intractable sense of that which no man can stomach and still be free, writing... When in the course of human events, writing it out so all the world could see whence come the powers of all just governments, tree of liberty grew and changed and spread, but the seed was English. I am American bred. I have seen much to hate here, much to forgive. But in a world where England is finished and dead, I do not wish to live.
Colgate tooth powder. That little breath of trouble, unpleasing breath, is an expensive liability. Expensive in dollars and cents. Because of unpleasing breath, you may miss out on a sale, a contract, a promotion, and you may never even suspect that your hoodoo is a little breath of trouble. So I'll tell you what. Brush your teeth night and morning and before every date with Colgate tooth powder. For Colgate tooth powder cleans your breath as it cleans your teeth. Scientific tests prove that Colgate tooth powder, in 7 cases out of 10, instantly stops unpleasing breath that originates in the mouth. Money can't buy a dentifrice that will clean your teeth better than Colgate tooth powder. Remember the name, Colgate tooth powder, with the accent on powder. In tonight's play, Constance Cummings starred as Susan and Carl Swenson appeared as John. Alice Dewar Miller's The White Cliffs was dramatized especially for this program by Gene Holloway. The music was composed and conducted by Charles Paul, and the entire production was directed by Mark Sloan. Next week, your Colgate Tooth Powder Theater of Romance will bring you the charming star of radio and the screen, Anne Baxter, in Jezebel. Join us next Tuesday night, won't you?
Halo, everybody, halo. Halo is the shampoo that glorifies your hair, so halo, everybody, halo.
Yes, use Halo shampoo if you want naturally bright and beautiful hair. For Halo contains no soap, therefore leaves no dulling film. The first time you use Halo, see how your hair sparkles and gleams with natural brilliance. How the deep, natural color looks brighter, glossier. Even in hardest water, Halo makes oceans of rich, fragrant lather. Halo quickly carries away loose dandruff and dirt. Needs no lemon or vinegar rinse. Say hello to Halo and goodbye to dulling soap film. Get Halo shampoo at any cosmetic counter.
So halo, everybody, halo. Halo shampoo, halo.
Until next Tuesday night, when Colgate Tooth Powder brings you Anne Baxter in Jezebel, this is your host saying good night and wishing you love, happiness, and romance. Ladies and gentlemen, victory over Japan is certain, but that victory will cost us dearly. In material, it calls for a colossal amount of ships, planes, tanks, arms, and supplies. To hasten the victory against Japan, every one of us is asked to buy a bigger share of extra bonds than we ever did before. Invest now in the 7th War Loan. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.